And we welcome you inside this Wednesday Sports Ethos Sacramento Kings podcast. Sam Comanche here with you, alongside, as always, the incomparable, the all-knowing Jillian Adge. I think that's the first time I've called you Jillian. And Jill, it is Doug Christie time. I was not expecting to say that when I woke up this morning, but Alvin Gentry, who we hope is doing all right, sounds like he's mostly asymptomatic. He is vaccinated, but he is an older gentleman. He's 67. But he will not be coaching tonight with a positive COVID test, as every other sports athlete and coach seems to be getting COVID right now. But it does allow us to take a little sneak peek at the 51-year-old Doug Christie. Never been a coach before in the NBA prior to this year. Now he already, quite the ascension for him. He already gets to coach an NBA game as the Kings take on the Wizards tonight in what will probably be a pretty empty Golden 1 Center in Sacramento. Are we excited about this, Jill? You said you're happy for him, but also kind of bummed because you fear that he's getting the Vivek label on him.
Sorry, I'm having to tell the dogs to be quiet. No, I'm happy for him, but I also feel bad. Yeah, because he's got the Vivek label on him since all the stories come out. And we've had the rumors between James Hamm and Jason Jones of back when Walton was here, and issues within the staff synergy. He talked about, I don't know if anyone else had heard these different ones, but these have been conversations over like the last month. But it was talked about how when George Karl was here and how he didn't get to pick his own staff, right? And so you had like him going against Nancy Lieberman. And so there was questions of like, were people like plants on the staff, you know, of who Vivek likes or not. And again, it's like, none of these coaches are weasels. Like, it's nothing to do with them. They all want to be out there and coach, but it's politics, right? And so, and then Dave Yeager actually had his whole staff he handpicked. And these were guys, as James Hamm said, they grew up together in the G League, right? And they traded players for like steak dinners, right? Like, this is, and so his staff was completely handpicked. Everyone was together. You never heard issues about any of those guys. It was always front office versus coaching staff. You know, there was never any question of who's going to be who. And if one went out, you knew the hierarchy, right? Like, it was, there was never questions, right? And so, and then when Luke came, it was kind of a piecemeal. He had some of his guys, and then you had, some of like, you would assume Vlade's choices. And then you had some holdover, which I like Rico, right? He came up from the G League as a player development guy. Like, I don't know if he was directly picked by Luke. I just know he was with the Kings prior to Luke coming here. Luke very much could have just said, hey, like, I want that guy. Cause I don't know why you wouldn't want a guy like Rico on your staff. Right. I mean, that's who wouldn't want one of the best player development guys on your bench. But was Bobby, I don't know. He was another one around here. Stacy was another one around here. You saw that, you know, there were rumors of, was Luke telling his assistants, I don't know how long I'm going to be here, so if you're offered a place somewhere else, go take it. You saw Jesse leave. You saw,
Jesse was like his Arizona pal though, man. I never liked that guy.
I'm giving you a backstory of, these are coach, when your head coach is telling people on your staff, go take jobs elsewhere, because I don't know how long we're going to be here. That's a problem.
Right.
Right. Like, regardless of how you feel about the coaches, like, we lost three coaches and Lindsey Harding was one of the finalists to be on the Minnesota Timberwolves staff. So again, like, the fact that we're constantly playing carousel here because coaches can't pick their people, right? That it's like you have piecemealed stuff. And Doug has wanted to be a coach for years. We've heard this behind the scenes, and anyone that knows the guy like knows that he was kind of waiting for the right time to do it. And so I'm happy for him that he's getting his shot, but I hate that it's under these circumstances. I wish him the best, and I will never want ill will for that guy or his family, but it sucks that we can't even, you're not even seeing anything be happy. You're just seeing the jokes already come out, because everything with this place is jokes. And so, I mean, if anyone, I figured it would be Mike, right? Because Mike had the hierarchy.
Been league since 03.
And well, and even on the bench, he's the one sitting to the right of Gentry. That's usually where your associate sits.
True.
And so to me, like, why wouldn't you go with the guy that's been on the bench for 20 years? Right. Like, I mean, I, to me, I could say, could like, I know people were talking about Doug or Rico, but Rico just got pushed to the front of the bench. So I sure. didn't really expect that. I thought that'd be a cool thing, but I didn't expect it. To me, Mike, he seemed like the most logical answer because he's been on the bench for 20 years and he sits on your right. Like, Doug, this is his first year coaching. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
It just
quick extension for Doug.
Christian. They have to sell me on that because that doesn't, I mean,
and hey, it might not be,
if it works, great. If yeah, not, well, that's, it just sucks.
If it works, I mean, you know,
it is what it is.
It's only going to be
for a game or two,
a game or two.
You would think, well, probably, hopefully,
yeah, hopefully
we're hoping for the best for Gentry that it only ends up being a game or two.
I imagine they'll probably, they play again on Friday. It's tough to get those double negative COVID tests if you test positive.
And he's in 10 days. Most guys are 10 days.
Yeah. And he's again, an older guy. So we might see Doug for two games. What another interesting thing that comes about now is who takes that empty spot on the bench where Doug sits usually from behind the bench. Will it be Lindsay Harding, who I could be wrong, Jill, if she were to be bumped up to the front of the bench for the next game or two, she would be the first assistant in Kings history to be actually on the bench. They've had women assistant coaches. None of them ever actually sat on the front of the bench though. I could be wrong.
They were
behind. Correct. Yeah. So Lindsay would be the first. And then the other option would be Stacey Augmon, former NBA player. Plastic Man was his nickname in his hoop days because his athletic ability to stretch. I think that's just an interesting, I've never heard of that, but Plastic Man could get his chance on the bench for a game or two as well. If they decide to go that route, I'd love to see Lindsay Harding. Always root for women coaches in the NBA.
You are a
Becky Hammon fan, just like I am. But it's the Doug Christie show for tonight that we know. And do you expect him to play? And this is stupid, but do you expect him to play? Any like, do you think he's going to try to emphasize a little bit more of the defense than the run and gun that Gentry's been doing? Or do you think he's just going to, I mean, what do you even do in a one game?
I don't think he can physically.
Yeah.
I don't think you can change a thing. Plus they're not even getting, they're not getting a shooter. They canceled their shoot around. I don't see how you can change your game.
Implement
plan
anything. Like, yeah, it's true.
The day of. No, it's, you got to go with whatever you're doing. And again, but this is the thing again, pushing the pace should not affect your defense. There are plenty of good teams, defensive teams that also push the pace and play fast. Like one has absolutely nothing to do with the other. Like it's, for 3 years, we've seen no matter if they play fast or if they play slow, these guys physically cannot just grasp the concept of defense. As Jaeger used to say, I can't get these guys to get the fundamentals down. I can't move on to B, C, D, whatever, because I can't get them to understand A. So it's really hard. So he said, screw it. I'm just going to have them run because I can't get them to do anything else. We haven't seen anything change in 3 years. Like they're still showing us they can't grasp A.
No,
or at least they can't grasp it for any consistent period of play. Right now, it's just excuses. It's, oh, if we change our style, we can't do this. Or if we do this, we can't do this. Like
losers have excuses.
You're professional athletes. Like the team uses any excuse they can get. And sorry, like. No, I mean, if anything, I think you could use height as the biggest excuse because for a lot of players, they can use their length to make up for something, right? Like, ooh, I go a little bit too far left. Oh, my length, I'm able to cover for, you know, taking a step too far or a step too back or, you know what I mean? Like, but this team, when you're like 4 or 5 inches shorter than everybody else, you don't have any fallback saving grace that might be able to help save
Davion
you.
Mitchell's toughness. That's what we're built on. I guess a better question would be maybe the rotations, because that'll be an interesting fact. That's a hard thing to do as a coach. You could be the most seasoned NBA coach. You might struggle sometimes, especially when your team is struggling like the Kings are following the 3-game win streak with an immediate 3-game losing streak. Tell me that's not just the fucking story of this team. Yeah. But yeah, that's going to be interesting to see Christie's management of this team. Does he go with a smaller rotation, go all out for that win if it just means playing the top eight guys? Does he stretch it out? Does Davion Jones get a lot of run? Does Harkless get back on the floor?
Does Metu somehow work? Like, and this
is kind of the case of Chimezie.
Yeah. Well, and why did Terrence Davis all of a sudden stop playing?
Yeah, what did he do wrong? What did he do wrong?
It was working.
Yeah.
No, playing Terrence Davis and limiting Buddy's minutes, it worked. You went completely away from that, and it did it. And I'm not even pointing out just one person, but I'm saying the inconsistency here, and we're seeing the inconsistent results. Like, yeah,
it's mind-boggling.
Figure, like, stick with something.
They can't, because nothing seems to work long enough for them to stick with it. That's my only theory. Nothing
but
stays.
But my thing
the same.
Is, why would you? I can see if it's not working and change it, but if it was working, why? Like, stick with it until all of a sudden it stops.
He got bored with it. Yeah, try something else. Yeah, no, that's nobody wants to see more Buddy Hield. We've seen enough Buddy Hield, but I think, and I hope, and I said this because Christina Warner had been tweeting about, like, why the fuck are they still playing Buddy Hield? I think the only logical reason is that they're just trying to, as much as they can, increase his trade value, as now we are on December 15th. It is the day that we expect trades. Of course, nothing's happened yet. It's not free agency. It's not the trade deadline. 100 or so NBA players just now are able to be traded after signing contracts this past year. That's what's changed, which allows trades to now happen probably more often. I don't know why I struggle to find that word. It's a simple word. We're going to see more trades soon. We're going to see any today, Jill? No, but you said we might hopefully see some during this extended homestand. I would agree with that.
If it gets bad enough, I mean, what did we say? They're only going to be away from Sacramento once.
They don't leave California.
Through January, and it's, yeah. And
they don't leave California until January 7th. They go to Golden State.
San Francisco, right? Yeah.
Exactly.
So if attendance starts struggling, I mean, to me, you never know, because you never know with this place. There's no, like, none of us can say we, like, ever can know anything. It's straight guessing, because anything could happen in this place at the drop of a pin.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just so frustrating. And then you have the national podcast, right? And there was one going today of KOC and Verno, and they're talking about how, oh, now people in Halliburton's orbit, so this could be managers, agents, whoever, are now talking about wanting to get him out of Sacramento, because this guy's getting blamed for everything now in his second year, and it's a shit show. And that how ownership's still pushing playoffs. So, I mean, it's who
man that wanted to be in
knows?
Sacramento.
Who the hell? No, like, and again, and I'm not blaming Halliburton for that. I mean, who, when you say orbit, it could be his third cousin.
Friend.
I mean,
it could be anybody.
It could be anybody. But again, like, I don't think anyone would be surprised at this point if anybody's camp wants to get them out of Sacramento, because you're in basketball hell and you get blamed for everything. And granted, there is plenty of stuff on them, like 100%. But there's also, it's on the GM, right? It's on ownership. And we saw, you know, we were all hopeful that bringing some of these guys together again, maybe it could change for the one time it could change. It clearly didn't. So it didn't work. And with the Buddy thing,
now, like, what?
With the Buddy thing is, I also won't be surprised if they're playing him, because they will keep playing it until they're hoping maybe in one and a whatever, like, statistic, that it could somehow turn around. Because if you can't find that trade piece, right, we all say trade him. But if you don't have a team that wants to take his $23 million or whatever it is, then again, you're stuck with it. And so, you know, like, you got to keep throwing it out there, because the other thing that we talked about at the beginning of the year is, again, we're relying on guys, rookies, they're second year players, two ways, end of bench, $1 million contract to save a salary team that's more than the Knicks, right? Again, they're not playoff, they're not anything, but we're relying on the end guys again to save this team. And that was one of my big things, is we say hold the starters accountable. They're not scared of anybody that's behind them. Like, really, like, they're not scared of anybody that's behind them. It's, and that's nothing in regards to the bench, but realistically, like, you think, oh, Fox is scared of someone behind him taking his spot? No. Like, no offense. Like, I mean, no one's taking Halliburton's spot. No one's taking Davion's backup spot. Buddy, you have Terrence Davis. Barnes, you have Harkless. And then it's Bagley, Metu, Joe. Like, Holmes isn't scared of anything. And that dude comes out and plays, you know, however he, you know, I have no issues with him. But, like, the backups are not scaring anybody. If anyone, maybe Terrence Davis to Buddy for a little bit, but then that went away real quick. So again, it's just, to me, like, there's no competition wise to where if you're going to hold someone accountable, like, okay, like, it's easy for us to say as a fan, but when you're doing this as a team, like, okay, go sit Fox, and then the rest of the league is laughing at you. Yeah. Not because they think Fox sucks, because they think you've ruined them, and they'll be able to save it.
Competition, I mean, breeds success, Jill.
So it's just like, it's, yeah.
You know, I these guys aren't looking over their shoulder. They're not too concerned. They're tired of losing. You know, I don't like the narrative, and I've been susceptible to, you know, saying it, but I don't really believe it, that these guys don't care. I do believe they care. And De'Aaron Fox said this in his postgame presser the other day, that you don't make it this far, you don't make it to this status as an athlete, and then all of a sudden stop caring just because you got a paycheck that's pretty stacked. No, if anything, you care more, because now you're more in the light. This is your career. You're committed to this. You know, you're literally contractually obligated to do this. So I do believe they want to win. De'Aaron Fox has never lost anywhere he's been. Davion Mitchell's never lost. Okay. Harrison Barnes, Tristan Thompson have rings. These guys know what it's like to win, just not with the Sacramento Kings. That's, I don't know what to say to that other than, okay, let's do something different then. Let's mix this group up. And we've been saying it for a while.
Right. And Fox has the easy out of, okay, yes, I'm getting paid all that money, but who's the best person you've paired me with in my 5 years here?
Tyrese Halliburton.
Harrison Barnes. Holmes. Like, it's not like they attempted to pair him with an all-star that would prove something, right? Like, I mean, come on.
True. And then the fact that, real quick, touching on this, because we want to torture ourselves some more, we're going to touch on some terrible Kings history in a second. But the fact that Tyrese Halliburton, somebody in his orbit, as you said, is even saying that they should get him out after just, he's in his second year.
Yes.
Yeah, if it's true. A sophomore player is already like, get me the fuck out of here. Oh my God.
I don't think it's him. It's people around him. And like I said, it very well could very much be an agent who's saying, I see the way this is going. Look how they've already turned on Fox.
Yeah.
I see exactly how this goes here. They turned on DeMarcus. They turn up, like, if he's going to then be the face of it, you're the star player, you know, this, but we say star player, it's because they're a star player here. It's not because they're necessarily a number one somewhere else.
No.
Like, that's what people have to differentiate as well. And so I very much could see it being someone saying after 2 years, because they have a 15 year history of seeing how, what this place does.
There's a blueprint. Players. Yeah. There's a blueprint. I mean,
and so it's not totally shocking in that sense. It's sad, but it's not totally shocking. Again, if because there are plenty of things they've said that I don't think are true. But again, like, I just wanted to put this out there because, like, I don't think anyone would be shocked. And again, it's not Halliburton saying it. They very much mentioned it was just someone in the orbit space.
There's another good King slogan. Not surprising, but sad. You know, I think that's what you said. Like, it's not surprising, it's just sad. That's just like, you could use that. It applies in so many Kings related topics. So I'm not surprised, I'm just sad. You know, I'm not mad, I'm disappointed. Classic parent line. We got into discussion.
The other thing too, where we're talking about, well, this could be about what we're going to end up talking about with trades, but it was funny. I'm trying to think, it was Sean Cunningham in the James Hamm and Sean podcast yesterday. I don't know if anybody else caught it, but he was saying how Sabonis's agent is Bogey's agent. If you're trying to work something there, like, again, you're working between teams, but again, plenty of teams will talk to players too and say, like, hey, we've gotten two offers. They're pretty similar. Where would you rather be? Like, and there have been players that have said, I would rather go here than here.
I'd rather go to the moon than Sacramento.
Remember that too. Yeah. Cause there are certain players too, right now, based on when they signed, they have to give the okay. And so, right. I can't remember. There was someone that put out a list yesterday too.
Yeah, there is a list. Bobby Marks, former NBA GM, always been very critical of the Kings. Yeah. I think it's cause he was in the running once for the Kings GM job and then didn't get it. I think Vlade got it from him. That's hilarious because Bobby Marks is like a seasoned GM, but he released the list of the players that are now eligible to be traded today, which, like I said, it's about 100 players. That's a lot. That does open things up a little bit.
But did he break it down into the additional ones that had to actually give the green light for trades or
I'm not going to lie to you, Joe. I didn't actually click the link. Just read the caption of his tweet. Yeah. I was like, 100 players. Wow. I should read it. Though.
I'm sure he did though.
Yeah. He breaks down the numbers quite a bit. We were having a discussion yesterday on Twitter about all the almosts in Kings history. The players that have literally come out and said, I thought I was going to be a Sacramento King. And then proved that was not the case. They went somewhere else. And now they've had these illustrious careers, which there's a lot of players. Jill. It's disgusting how many players thought they were coming here, had accepted that they were coming to Sacramento, then went elsewhere because of management involvement, ownership involvement, I should say, management changing their minds, trying to sell jerseys. Yada, yada, yada. We could talk forever about it. The big thing I want to point out, and then I'm going to let you go about it because you have a lot more on this, is right now for Monty McNair, his year and a half tenure as the Kings general manager has been defined by his almost trades. His almost trades. He's hit the draft picks, we think, but his trades that didn't happen that could have happened. Dante DiVincenzo, DJ Wilson.
Everybody would be completely happy and Sacramento no one would be native. Complaining.
Yep. And then Kuzma, Harrell, potentially a draft pick for Buddy Hield, which would be the best offer they would ever get for Buddy Hield. And it still will be the best offer they've ever got for Buddy Hield. But he's still defined by, like, I had these chances and I missed them. The previous gentleman,
Danny Ainge, right? Where Danny Ainge, like Danny at the Ainge end too, of the, he had all those today. Draft picks, right? All those draft picks. And it was always the, that's the almost moves that got him to leave. And kudos, to him for now landing with the Jazz. It makes sense. We've been hearing about that since he left there. So, that's a good grab for them. And
oh, it is.
I hope that Justin Zanuck still gets to keep doing what he's doing because
they're a good
organization. He's done a fantastic job over there since taking over.
But I was going to connect it in some parts to Jeff Petrie, who's hands down the best executive the Kings have ever had in Sacramento. He did the best job and he was here the longest. But in his later years, he whiffed. And this is what I tweeted in response to you. He saw so many good young players come and work out in Sacramento when they had all those lottery picks from 2008, 2009, 2010. And he always, with the exception of DeMarcus Cousins, he always took the wrong person. However, there's backstory to that. Almost like there's an excuse for that. Like there's an excuse for McNair in these trades not working out. You want to enlighten some of these people, Jill, on these stories? Because they're crazy to me.
So
I don't think they're common knowledge.
The excuse for the Thomas Robinson, or at least what you hear
2012 draft.
Now, was how Dame Lillard says that he worked out here multiple times. He only missed like one shot. He had basically the workout like of a lifetime. Sacramento loved him, basically told him they were taking him. The story is Jeff Petrie went to the Maloofs and said, I need you to give money for us to re-sign Jason Thompson, because if he leaves, we do not have a power forward on our roster at all. Like we will have no one. It's the old Tristan Thompson trade, right? Like we don't have a center, so we're going to have to get rid of a good asset just in case the hypothetical whatever doesn't happen. And that ended up blowing up, right? So similar to this one. So apparently the Maloof said no. We're not giving you that money, which they ended up giving it later. But on that day of the draft, they said no, right? And this was when there were money issues already going around. So the story, if true, of him asking and them saying no, does not shock me one bit. So going into the draft, you had a power forward fall. You did not work out that power forward. But one fell. And so you ended up taking Thomas Robinson over, Dame Lillard and
one pick before
and all she wrote.
Yeah.
And Dame still says to this day, still tweets about it. he thought he was going to be a Sacramento King, and he was all about it because it was close to home, right? Oakland. It would have been perfect. And for, I know we joke about this that, oh, we would have ruined Dame. Like, no,
I refuse to believe that.
I do not. No. And so, yeah, so you could have had that, right? And then his partner in crime, CJ, they worked him out three times, and they actually called him back the night before the draft and had him work out again and told him, we are taking you at 7 if you are available. What do we hear the next day? Oh, Vivek wants to make the big splash and trade up to number 2 for Ben McLemore. Oh, King's looking at moving up for Ben McLemore. You had a guy in the night before and told him you were taking him at 7. And then all of a sudden the next day, the Kings are looking to make a trade. I'm sorry. That rings all kinds of bells of meddling. I don't think, I could very well be wrong, but I don't think a GM would have you in there and say, I'm taking you. Although, you know, we saw ownership in the first time. And then I have no reason to believe it wasn't someone else saying, I don't want CJ. I want the big splashy name. And the big splashy name fell, which plenty of people were still fine with it. You know, we all had hope for it. Like, he was the big splashy name.
Yeah.
But this is my, and CJ fell, right? And ended up becoming who he was. But this is also my thing too, is you saw the same thing with the Curry thing. And when he fell was, people said, oh, he's a great shooter, but he's not athletic enough. Oh, he's really smart, but he's not athletic enough. At some point, you take the person that's good at all these things and has the basketball IQ,
keep it simple,
over just being athletic, because those guys, no offense, end up lasting a lot longer in the NBA than just the pure athletic ones. Those are the, like, you make or you break, right? At least the ones that, the other guys, you can at least mold into role players. They don't have to be a star, but at least they'll end up being a really good role player. And so this team has just consistently shot themselves. You had Luka even say after that he thought he was going to Sacramento. So,
everybody thought that.
You know, I mean,
second pick. It was either Aiden or Doncic.
You know, and that was after, you know, we know that they had meetings with everyone and all that. We're not privy again to those meetings. We just hear the stuff after and what players say and what GMs say after the fact. But it just seems like there's always something there that prevents them from making the right decision. And what's frustrating is that you hear them saying they're going to make the right decision and then completely flip it. It's just
trust your gut, Jill.
What? Why? Like, why? Don't be worried about jersey. And the same thing about Jimmer. Oh, we're drafting Jimmer because of jersey sales, and we think people will buy ticket sales. Oh, we're not going to put the injury reports out, you know, or we're going to be they can't not put them out, but we're going to be super vague about it, because we don't want to hurt ticket sales. Like, right. There's so many things that it's like these. They do stuff for the wrong reason, and it's not basketball, like straight basketball on the court related. And if you're a small market team, you have draft and you have trade. Those are your assets. Like, that's how you get anywhere. And if you don't draft well, you have no assets that people want.
And that's where McNair is right now.
When you look at unless you're jumping in as a third team and willing to, you know, to reap the benefits of these other people like Cleveland did last year and Jared Allen, you saw Indiana do it with Caris LeVert. You saw Houston do it with Oladipo. Bad teams jumping in. They don't even, the assets don't even necessarily have to fit what your plan is, but they're an asset. Like, right. I know we hate to think of players that way, but realistically, if you're a front office person, like, that's how you're thinking about them, right? Like, that's how you move the chess pieces. And so, and that's why I refuse to do the, oh, he doesn't fit here. No, accumulate the talent, get assets. Like,
worry about it later.
Doesn't have to be a long-term plan, but if you can accumulate talent assets, then you at least have a lot more pieces on your board to work with than you did before of a bunch of non-working high paid pieces. So
a couple of notes about what you just said. In both those instances of draft whiffs where they could have had the tandem of McCollum and Lillard instead of them going to Portland, they instead, like you said, took the higher name, athletic, very raw player from Kansas, because Thomas Robinson was a Kansas product and Ben McLemore as well. They were both super young.
And every team worked him out that did not take him. The Kings were, again, the team that didn't work him out and had no, like, to me, that's where you think like, why did these four teams not take him after working him out and being so high?
And it ironic because
an undersized, then, small, undersized power forward.
good rebounder though. He had a lot of hops. Still could play in the league. McLemore's 28. Robinson's, I think, 29, 30. Crazy that they're still that young. It's ironic though, because then the reason Vlade, you know, one of the reasons that he didn't want to take Luka is he didn't work out for Sacramento. I want to take the guy that's willing to come here and work out like Bagley did. So this is a complete flip from apparently Petrie's mindset. And then the Fredette draft, that was just a mess of a draft altogether at the back end of the lottery. Not just the Kings, but they originally took Jill Bismack Biyombo, who was not going to sell any tickets, was some no-name guy from the Congo. I think he's from the Congo. And then they flipped him to get Jimmer, which obviously, like you said, was all about the money, getting people in there, yelling Jimmer as much as possible. And that fizzled out because the guy had no handle, no defensive ability, really no athleticism. Killing it in China, though, Jimmer Fredette.
Yeah, so, and the thing here is when you're in the lottery for 15 years, 14 of the 15, so you didn't have the 2008 draft pick, and you have two in the league, like, what, at least from Vlade era on.
Yeah, Tyree Evans.
And I should say 15, the last 15 picks, two are in the league. If you're a bad team, two out of 15, like, that can't happen. And one, we're being told we're shipping off. So again, you add one, right? I won't count in obviously Halliburton and Davion because, you know, they're still here and that seems to be working, but I mean, we couldn't hit on first and we couldn't hit on seconds and we had a crap ton of seconds. And I know seconds are not, you know, it's a, you never know, but if you look around the players that were taken around us, they've all been able to be role players and some of them on bad teams and they were still able to be role players. So there were, I mean, we took multiple guys too, where we took them because we thought we had enough talent and they were going to be there in Europe and never, ever going to come over. And yet there was Jaden McDaniels. I'm trying to think. I went through the list yesterday. Terrence Mann. Like, there were multiple.
Love Terrence Mann.
And again, I gave you three, but there's, like, if you go look, there is a plenty long list of guys that are still role players in the league. That managed to stick around, whether regardless if they were on a good team or not. And it's, I mean, we sold the Gary Trent Jr. pick because we thought we had enough talent.
Yeah, like, that's outrageous.
We didn't need more youth. We needed, you know, talent. Like, I mean, come on.
Vlade really, he took, I mean, I remember when the Gary Trent selection, I was like, we don't need another two guard, but this is Bagley's teammate in college at Duke. A great shooter. You can never have enough shooters. And it's a second round pick. They traded him for another second round pick in the future.
Do I hear all these good teams saying I don't need any more young players? No, because what do they do with those young players?
Flip them.
Thank you. They flip them for a proven someone.
Let's
because
be the GMs.
It's going to get make them be better. Like, it's this we're place never does. Like, we always think we're smarter than everyone else in the league.
For no reason.
Instead of following the blueprints that are already there by teams that have, you know, rebuilt, been better like five times over the 15 years we're bad.
Yes.
Like,
we're forgetting one infamous draft as well. The Sauce Castillo 2014 draft. The Kings had the eighth spot. They were rumored to be taking Alfred Payton. So this one's not as big of a whiff. However, Alfred Payton is a better player than Nick Stauskas. But Vivek stepped in, said, I want Stauskas. I want the shooter. He right. reminds me of Klay Thompson, the Canadian Klay Thompson. Other guys that went after, just looking at this now because, you know, why not? Dario Saric, Zach LaVine, Vlade's guy. He was not the general manager yet at the time. TJ Warren, Jusuf Nurkić, Gary Harris, and of course, pick during a Taco Bell commercial, Nikola Jokic was in the second round. And Bogdan Bogdanovic was in that draft. They ended up getting his rights.
And they worked later. Out a lot of players that year, too. They yep. worked out a lot of players.
You kind of have to when you have the back end of the lottery. You don't know what you're going to get. So you got to make sure cast a wide net. And they chose literally
and this
the
is
worst
what's
of those guys.
Too, is they work out all these players. And yet, who's there determining this talent or non-talent? I mean, it's especially when you hear guys actually have good workouts and had right. good workouts for multiple people. Like you saw Zach LaVine, you saw Donovan Mitchell, like you've seen most of these players the last so many years come through. And you just missed. And unfortunately in a place like Sacramento, you can't afford to miss. Nope. Otherwise you stay
where
you
way out of it
because yeah. no one feels sorry for you. They're all still looking to take advantage of you.
And they do it really well. They really do.
So all the tweets. It sucks for us as fans, but realistic, oh, yeah. no one's looking to save you.
I was laughing at all the tweets coming from one of the Raptors reporters saying how because the Raptors have not been great this year. They're kind of in a rebuilding mode, but he tweeted like six different times, the variation of like, can't we just play the Kings every game? Like, God, this team looks amazing when they play the Sacramento Kings. Not against anyone else. They've just lost to the Nets, who had eight players yesterday. Of course, one of them was Kevin Durant, but still. But like, that's what people think of when they look at us. Like, man, I wish it was always just the Kings coming to play us because we'd have a lot yeah. more fun. Kings fans, we just wish we didn't play.
Well, and Toronto, right? Second night of a back, right? They were playing a back to back.
Toronto, yeah.
But they're because they played it, but they're also like under no perception that they are a playoff team. Like they know exactly what they're doing, who they are. They build their culture. What I tweeted out, it was, I think, three first rounders. The rest were like undrafted yeah. or
G
second
League
round
guys,
picks. Like
yeah.
this and guys that won in the G League and won championships here. Like Dan Tolsman does his job to a T. He's the one that found Terrence Davis too. I mean, before all that came and he was going to stay there prior to all of his off-court stuff. So
right.
yes, we can say they gave him to us, but it was only after all that stuff happened. They did think that they had something there. But similar to Miami, like he is the king of finding like these hidden gems or at least then getting them to agree on draft night. Like they do a great job on YouTube of the storytelling and telling these and with the players and with them and like the phone calls they make saying, say you want to stay undrafted and come to us. Like say you want to stay undrafted and come to us. And they go there and they succeed. Like they have that culture and it doesn't matter where you were taken or not taken. You know your role. You do your role.
And you get paid.
Or you know like that you don't play. Like
yeah.
And then you end up getting paid. Fred VanVleet won a G League championship, won an NBA championship. And is getting paid less and is getting paid less than Buddy Hield.
Yeah. And he's way better.
He got paid. He got paid. But that's a steal of a contract that he's getting paid. It's like $2 million less a year. But he's still, but to me, like, but again, when you're looking at teams and flipping assets and you're looking at money and you say, who can I get for this kind of price? Buddy Hield for 23, right? And yes, it declined some. Or a Fred VanVleet, who's a way better player and getting paid less. Like this is the problem the Kings are dealing with is we know that they want to flip these guys, but when you have other guys out there who are more maybe of an all-around talent, it's a lot easier to move those yeah. than it is for, you know, someone. So it's
their
you know,
best case scenario.
They got to find the right scenario. And they had that with the Lakers. I don't know if that exists again. I really don't. I don't know.
No, I think
they're going to have to show me because I won't believe it until they show me.
Yeah, it's going to end up being pulling the trigger on a heel trade that gets you some like not really uncertain young second round pick that hasn't gotten his chance. And then some guy whose contract matches Heald's, obviously, who whatever team in this situation doesn't want any more themselves. So it's not going to be a trade in the end. My point being,
you're
going to excite us.
No,
It's just that you're, it's just going to be
you might be taking a lesson value.
Yeah, you're just getting rid of Buddy because you want to get rid of Buddy, which we all do, you know. And Buddy, I think, wants to get out of here. So,
well, and at some point, you just have to say it doesn't work, and right. then try and
nothing wrong
and
with that.
Not, and he comes from a place of Daryl Morey, right? Who, like we have seen, holds on to stuff. Maybe too long, maybe not too long. And that's the thing is we all said last year during the trade stuff, oh my God, why did you not give him up then? Well, had that deal worked out in the summer, like they all thought, then it would have been worth it, right? That would, good job. You would have got the clap of saying we were wrong to not give it up during the season. And that was the right move. But unless you show us that right move, we can't say good job on keep, do you know what I mean? Like that,
yeah.
that we can't say good job on keep holding it. Like at some point it's,
you got to do something.
It is what it
do
is.
Something.
So
I love the memes going around of know. Like that stick figure poking something. And it's just like Monty McNair. It's like, come on, do something.
I mean, if he can do something next summer, well then we would say great job of holding off and not, but we don't know. We don't have a crystal ball, but right now all we can say is it's not working. And we can't say good job because that deal didn't happen.
Right. And I will say my last little closing thought here for this episode. I hate when people are saying that McNair's seat is warm or they should fire him. No, they shouldn't, guys. Are we really going to do the same thing over and over again? Vlade Divac was given many years at this job, like 5 or 6 in total. Vlade was given as the general manager when he's like kind of nudged his way in, settled himself in. Monty McNair deserves at least 3 or 4 years, in my opinion. I get that he hasn't done anything, sure. but I'm sorry. If your solution to this is to be impatient again and then fire the GM and start over, I don't want to see it. I want McNair to get his fair shake, get him through the year, get him next offseason, then we can evaluate. I might be the outlier there, Jill, but
that's not doing the same thing. But again, I think it all comes down to is this his vision? Is sure. it him making the goal? Because, okay.
What is his
say,
vision?
Great. Hold on. But let's say, I'm not even talking about that. I'm saying it's, you could fire him, but if the ultimate vision is being whatever Vivek wants, he's just going to hire somebody else that has his vision and you're going to get the same thing. Mm-hmm. So again, like, unfortunately for us, it's always a cloud and we have no idea. We all want to think it's Monty making decisions because he's the one in the chair, right? But again, like same way I wanted Vlade gone and a new person in. But you still have no idea what's going on at the top. Because again, whether it's true or not, you still have the national people out there going, it's still playoff or bust. If that's true, your hands are a little bit more tied, right?
And
what you can do or not do. And if that's McNair's vision, then okay, great, but you need to actually do something to get that to happen. Because if that's your vision and you're still doing nothing, then you're not doing your job, right? Like, because this, again, like you said, this is a results business, right? And we have an owner who has wanted results, whether that's been good for us or not. Like, that's what it is. And so, again, it doesn't matter what we want or what we think is smart. Unfortunately, like those guys are the ones getting paid millions and have the power. And what sucks for us is we're the ones left always in the shit while they're all making their money and then riding off to wherever else they're going, and we'll be just fine. And are left in the same tornado of whatever.
It's only December, Kings fans, and we've played 28 games. So it's, I don't know, was not expecting this. I can tell you that when this season started. However, the Kings are somehow, by the grace of God, but also not, because I don't think anyone wants to see it, they're tied for 10th. They're in the play-in if the season ended today.
But you want to know why? Like, I think while two things are like
optimism,
like what you just said, no, that things are prolonging too, and you're not seeing maybe rash things. It's because, what is it? They're 3 games out of 10 and 3 games out of 15. Like it's that close to where one move could put you this way and one move can completely drop
right
you.
In the top five.
Like
the lottery.
And if they still have no idea which route they're going to go, then you're going to keep seeing this middle road and pray that some unicorn becomes available, or, you know, that unfortunately other teams have not completely eliminated, you know, knocked us down, which I think would make it a lot easier. Sure. You know what I mean? Like,
we've
if other teams weren't going through COVID or injuries and all that, because really the Kings have been lucky in that sense.
True.
Compared to what like Nets can barely and Bulls can barely field eight people. The Kings have one injury, like, and then they just lost their coach. Like, I mean, in the grand scheme of things, knock on wood, they haven't been touched as much as everybody else. And so we don't even have that excuse to use.
No, I was gonna say, it hasn't helped them, but yeah.
Yeah. In previous years, I think we could have had this record, and in a normal West, like, everyone's significantly over 500. And so we wouldn't even be near 10. Right. Mm-hmm. But you're seeing teams that you're used to seeing over 500. Not. And so it's left them with their golden hope of of changing things around, which always happens for the Kings, right? Like, nothing can ever just go
one way or the other. Way. Yeah. So McNair, Monty, and the whole front office, good group of guys, Wes Wilcox, just pick a side. All Kings fans, I think, could connect on the fact that they don't really care as long as you choose a route and go all in. That's still not
happening. And follow that route.
Yeah, they still haven't committed to something yet. They're still trying to figure it. It's like they're trying to find their way around Sacramento. They're like learning the area. They play tonight, the Doug Christie game. That's what people are going to talk about. That's going to be fun to watch. The game might not be fun to watch. It'll just be fun to watch Doug coach. And then they play, again, a lot of home games. They play the streaking Memphis Grizzlies, who, shit, Jill, they might be better without Ja Morant. They play them on Friday. Then they play San Antonio, who they're tied with right now for 10th. So a lot of good Western Conference opponents coming up after this Wizards game. We'll see if anything changes. We'll see if anyone's acquired or sent off. Something should happen, for the love of God. And when it does, we'll be waiting to talk about it. So that's it for us today, though, on this Wednesday. You guys have a great rest of your day. Let's get a win, maybe, for Doug. Slater, dudes.